Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Drunk women solving crime.
Drunk women.
Drunk women solving crime.
Drunk women.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
This is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Taylor Glenn, and I'm a writer and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
As well as author and comedian Katie Wilkins.
Hello.
This is where beer meets breaking and entering, Prosecco meets perjury, and vodka meets vandalism. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
This is so strange, I'm just going to go with it.
And this is why we chose you for Men's Month.
It's right there. It's okay if you say that.
We wouldn't dream of it.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Welcome to Drunk Women Solving Crime. This is a very special live Zoom recording. Tonight, we are joined by our wonderful patrons.
Yay!
Yeah, the patrons can't make any noise because it's a webinar. So it's just us going, yeah.
But they're all writing, but they're cheering.
That's
rest
right.
Assured.
They are typing out cheers. So if you could hear them as woo.
Oh, wow, one person said, make me laugh, bitches. That's a bit harsh. No, that, they didn't say that. There.
One person wow. said lies, Katie, as well.
I tell you what, it's a good thing I don't know how to kick people out, because I would. I would.
Jackie Weaver.
I would Jackie Weaver this shit. If you would like to support us on Patreon in return for live Zoom recordings like this, over-the-top shout-outs by myself, ad-free listening, and other goodies, check out patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime. Now, tonight is also very special because we are recording with one of our November Men's Month guests from the Distraction Pieces podcast. Will you please welcome the one and only Scroobius Pip?
Yay!
I love
Welcome.
That the patron plug came directly after threatening to kick people out.
If you want to be threatened by
we'll kick you out. If you'd like to take their place, subscribe now. We've got some room all of a sudden.
It's an opening.
I like to go from harsh to warm, harsh to warm. It's how I was parented. So it's all I know. Well, Scroobius, thank you so much for being with us. Obviously, we've had the pleasure of being on your podcast.
Yes, it was lovely to have you, and I'm delighted to be here.
It was amazing. And we got to talk about all sorts of things. Of course, on our podcast, we always kick it off the same way. And that is to ask you the question. Yes. Have you ever been the victim of a crime?
I've been toying over a few options on this. Tomorrow, where I am, is local elections. And I was gonna bring up my local, the Thurrock Tory government, who have got our council £500 million into debt.
Through
clearly corrupt, dodgy deals.
Holy shit.
But that's not much fun to talk about. I've got that on my mind as it's polling day tomorrow.
Oh,
but
no.
I have kind of got two, because there's two instances of robbery. And one of them's surprisingly heavy and one of them's surprisingly light. So I'll start surprisingly heavy. Let's get straight in.
Yeah,
start heavy.
It's Taylor's theory of parenting, the harsh and the light. But yeah, in this very living room I'm sitting in, I came home, I think it was 2019, just before Christmas, and I'd been burgled. And I'm really not a material person at all. So I'd always thought, I won't be that bothered if I'm burgled. It doesn't really matter. But I was stunned at how much it hit me and how much it affected me kind of afterwards. A kind of thing. I walked in the front door and all the cupboard doors were open. And I just remember for honestly a couple of years, almost every time I'd get home, I'd give a little breath before I looked through the door. Or it was if it was in the evening more. Every time I got home in the evening, because that's when I got home on that one, I'd give a little bit of a, no one's done anything. But they didn't even, all they took was a PlayStation controller. They turned my house upside down. And it was so weird because the police were like, yeah, it is odd. And the police kind of made me feel like it was a targeted thing and they were looking for something in particular. But then my brother, the most logical person I know, came round and was like, it was kids, wasn't it? Because kids aren't going to steal, like, art or any of these other things, like expensive devices. They were looking for cash or a PlayStation controller, because you can't explain a crucifix with a stormtrooper on it to your mum. or a big painting or whatever else, or, you know, a DVD, you know, any of the expensive goods that you would have. You can't explain that. Whereas if you can just grab cash or stuff like that. So that genuinely put my mind at rest, because it was kind of nice to go, right, it's just some kids who are probably skint and having a rough time. And
do you know, I would be more worried, though, because I'd be like, what if they come back and bully me?
Yeah.
I'm more frightened.
I genuinely had some of that for a while, because I was like, well, they didn't find what they were looking for. What were they looking for? Can I find it? Can I? I want to give it back, because I don't want them. I want them to visit. But yeah, that was just a weird one, and it surprised me. As said, because you hear of burglary all the time, and as said, because I'm not very materialistic, I've always kind of dismissed it. But it surprised me how just having people in your home.
Yeah.
In and amongst your stuff.
It's such a violation.
It's so personal.
Yeah. I know people that moved out of their house after they got burgled. They were just
you don't feel safe anymore.
No, she was just, they got home, the door was open and they were like, shit. So he went in and left her outside. And she was like 8 months pregnant as well. She was just all right, I'm staying here. And then the robber jumped from the upstairs window right in front of her, out of the front window. Yeah. And she screams and he runs off. But they were just like, I guess we're moving.
I'd leave the country if that happened to me. That's so terrifying.
Although they didn't take anything in this case, it ended up costing me a fortune, because I got Ring cameras out of paranoia, like the security cameras out the back, which, because of the angle of them, revealed to me something I didn't know as a 6'4" person, but I was going really bald on top. So I ended up spending $3,000 on a hair transplant, all because of these burglars. Because they made me get a Ring camera, because it was so funny, because I don't look at the back of my head. No one sees it. I'm massive. And I hadn't realised how bald I was going. So these Ring cameras, genuinely, every time I'd go out, I'd be like, oh, hang on. Who's this old man who's living in my house?
Now we've gotten to the real trauma.
It's real. It's real.
It's really cost me a fortune
in the end.
God, you may take my controller, but you will not take my self-esteem.
Out of interest, was the controller attached to a PlayStation? Were they really stupid?
It wasn't. It was a wireless one, but I've still never replaced it because I'm too lazy. It was years ago. But the more lighthearted one, I was going to say, was the first time I got robbed, because I got And again, it doesn't sound lighthearted as I start it. I was in Tooting and I got mugged.
Oh,
but
no.
They couldn't be bothered to get off their bicycle. So it was genuinely someone on a bicycle cycled up to me and first kind of said, have you got change for the phone? So it was a while back. And I was like, nah. And they just kind of paused and went, give me all your money. And I was like, right. And it was weird because particularly as a bloke, you kind of feel in that situation, I'd stand up and I kind of paused and thought, right, he might have a knife or something on him. I don't know. I checked my pocket and I had £3.70. And I said to him, I need £1.50 to get back over the bridge because the Dartford crossing was £1.50 and cash only at that point. So I was like, I'll give you £2.20. And then, so I gave him his £2.20. So it was the another very low impact robbery, but it just, I literally haggled. Yeah, as someone in chat has said, I haggled with the mug because, like, I didn't have any change. I need to get back over the bridge. So, yeah,
oh,
that
that's
was a,
such amazing quick thinking and quick maths, to be honest. I would have been like, I need whatever's left is yours, whatever that is.
Yeah. I was like, look, here's what I need to get home.
Was he just like, fair play, mate? Yeah, all right.
Yeah, he accepted it. That was the thing. I remembered it more now. What happened? The guy kind of cycled past me and gave me a look, and this is just absolute lack of street smarts. I thought, that guy gave me a bit of a look. I'm going to cut through this alleyway to get to where I'm going.
That's
so he then cycled down the alleyway to me, and I was like, right, yeah, this was a bad move. My thought was, I'll get to where I'm going quicker, because it feels like there's some tension here, but yeah, instead, like, I drew myself into a haggling situation.
Move too.
Yeah. And he's on a bike. He can definitely move faster. This is ridiculous.
And you know, the creator of the alleyway probably wants us to just use them as shortcuts. It's really become, it's a shame. It's a shame what it's become, the alley. We need to reclaim the alley.
Yeah, exactly.
Take the alleys back.
Yeah, definitely.
So he stayed on his bicycle the whole time. So he was just
stood
there.
The whole time. He just kind of leant slightly. So one foot down. And then, he took his 220 and was off on his merry way.
Because I tell you what, on a bike, I am the least stable when I stop. So all you'd have to do is poke me with an index finger and I'd be down.
Over.
I'd be down.
There's so much that could have been so easily done there. But literally, I was just like, I don't know. This is so strange. I'm just going to go with it.
Oh, you did great. I mean, you kept your fare for the bridge.
Yeah, exactly. I was covered.
Genius.
I made it home.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sort of calling that a win, to be honest.
I mean, yeah, I haggled. I got myself a deal.
It's good to have a win. You may know this because I know you've listened to the podcast. We always ask, what would you say or do to the perpetrator of this crime? And it could be to either one of them or to both. It's up to you.
To the first one, the robbery one, I was really pleased. This is going to make me sound really kind of caring and deep and personal, but I was really pleased how quickly I got to kind of, I went from anger to, oh man, how shit must it be to be in a situation where you're having to rob houses like a few days before Christmas and things like that. It's like, that's no one's ideal situation. That isn't the kind of crime that some big drug lord is doing or whatever. It's like, that's someone who's got having a rough time, so I'd be very forgiving there. But to the other guy, I'd give him the £1.50 because it's all automated now. You just get it, reads your number plate. You just get a bill at the end of the month. So I'd give him the rest of the £1.50 and hope he finds all he
needs.
You
give him
the world.
A lot. That's so lovely. If he had just held out for some technology, he could have more. Yeah. That's a hot tip for anybody out there.
Exactly.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
Guys, are we ready for some true crime?
Oh, you know.
So ready.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it. It starts with a kind of a dramatic sentence that I wrote myself. Since primitive times, people have created art depicting horses. It's true. But it wasn't until 1878... that we learned something specific about how horses gallop, which meant that artists had been painting horses mid-run completely wrong for centuries. So your first question is, what did we learn about how horses gallop in 1878 that we didn't know before?
Wait, did someone take a photo of a horse and we could see that they like bend their leg a different way or something? Well, no, they wouldn't have been able to because they have to be still for a photo in the olden days. Okay, forget I said that.
I can't. It's out there now. We're You're all right, thinking about there. It.
Yeah, you know this is being recorded, Katie.
Yeah, I just forgot for a sec.
I was wondering if it was some kind of... Because, like, isn't it cows or something whose knees go the other way so they can go upstairs but not downstairs? Or something like that. So it's some weird... So, yeah.
That's a great guess.
They can only live in bungalows. But is it actually... Because, again, when you were saying that, Kate, I'm sure there was, as you said, there was some kind of... Something about what legs they have off the floor at what times.
Yeah.
Or something like that, surely.
Okay. But, yeah. I like your minds. I like your style. I like where this is going. Hannah George, any advance on what's
Was
been said?
Every horse just painted in reverse? For some reason, they just figured that horses only run backwards. They've seen horses. They've seen horse racing. They've been in wars. They've ridden horses. But no painter was able to make it look like it was going forward. They just maybe that?
Yeah, Hannah is absolutely right, actually. So amazing. Amazing. Katie, never doubt yourself. You were spot on. Scroobius, you added to it. It was. There's a moment where all four hooves come off the ground when a horse gallops. Yeah. But obviously with the naked eye, no one had been able to see it. And this is really funny. I only learned this when I adopted greyhounds because it's the same thing. And I nerded out on every fact about them, including their gait. So humans couldn't see this. And it's really funny because if you look at old paintings of horses up until this time, it's terrible. They're just all splayed out. It's like they've been dropped from the sky. They just had no idea of how they were moving. It's so funny. Now, what does any of this have to do with crime, I hear you ask? Well, our case involves a man called Edward Muybridge, who was the first to prove how horses gallop. But
how
as
much
we
did
will
it cost
learn,
to cross him? I just heard the word bridge again, and I just thought, let's do a little callback. Let's let's enjoy ourselves.
The Muybridge is free. So. As we will learn, there was also a crime along the way. Let's learn a bit about Muybridge, the free bridge. He was born in 1830 in London, and at age 20, he traveled to the US for work. That's called doing a reverse tailor. he set up successful businesses in both New York City and San Francisco. So your next question is, what type of business do you think he ran? I'll give you a hint. It's kind of nerdy.
What would he be doing? I've no idea.
Was he the guy that painted it or the guy
discoverer.
Yeah, we haven't established how he proved it just yet.
But he's running a nerdy business in 1850. Oh, 1850. What to are the start, nerds doing in 1850?
It's so bad that all nerd stuff now is just computer-based. So we're as soon as computers on, it's like, what would nerds do then before they had keyboards?
Are they playing with clocks? Are they making clocks?
I was literally like, did they have glasses in those days? Because that's pretty damn nerdy. So I imagine they were just busy wearing glasses. Maybe he started the very first Specsavers.
Nice. I love that.
Some kind of puzzles. Making some kind of puzzles, maybe. Crosswords. I'm sure crosswords weren't around then, but surely there was some kind of...
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. They may have been. And there were definitely Wordles. People loved puzzles. We used to buy these things called tavern puzzles.
Yeah.
And they were hundreds of years old and they were impossible to solve. Only my brother had the patience to do them. And we got clock making from Katie?
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm going to also chuck in Panic Room. Maybe they're all playing Panic Room games, solving puzzles.
Okay. You're on the right track, all of you. Didn't quite hit it. I just felt like calling it nerdy. He was a bookseller who specialized in rare books. Nerd!
Well, I was going to say, I'm amazed that the sentence was, you're all on the right track, when one was making clocks, another was making puzzles, and the other was just wearing glasses. But then it does all work. They do all kind of link
you
into it.
You can read about all of those things. Also, like,
you get puzzles in books. You put your glasses on to read books.
We're very supportive. I will not let anyone feel stupid on my watch, Scroobius. Well, so you will all get compliments.
I kind of feel like we've insulted, but we should have insulting knowledge as nerdy. We're not the parents in Matilda. You can have books.
Again, particularly then when there was huge, illiteracy and the working class, books were really key, and we're like, nerds.
Nerd alert.
You can books away, nerds.
You're defending it. So he was a bookseller specializing in rare books. So far, so Notting Hill. He didn't look anything like Hugh Grant, though. I want you to picture Walt Whitman. Mm. He had a very long white beard. In fact, if Scroobius used like an aging app filter.
Do you mean a ring?
A ring video. A ring camera.
If he could see the top of his head.
Too soon, guys. Lay off Scroobius.
Yeah, sorry. I love that, though. I love that because you're so tall, like you just didn't know.
Just didn't know. Just I'd had no reason to find out. Just weirdly, I used one of those aging apps a little while ago and it genuinely freaked me out because I looked exactly like my dad.
Oh, yeah.
Which is so weird because I wouldn't say we particularly look alike, but whatever tech it does, it literally looked like a photo of my dad. And I was like, that's scarily good that they
They're very scary, especially when there's a bit of gender fluidity because I looked like my uncle and I just couldn't.
Yeah.
I just couldn't. I was like, no. Please no. So, although Muybridge was busy selling books, nerd, all through his 20s, later in life, he would say that his very first memory was not until 1860, when he was 30 years old. Your next question is, why would this be his first ever memory?
He got struck by lightning.
Okay, that's a great answer.
Nice. Is it because he took a photo? Because going back to Katie's answer of the photos, like, I feel like if he says that a photograph is like a memory and that's how he is defining memory. Because I feel like when I look at videos of when I was little, I feel as though I can remember, you know, singing at this birthday party. But I know I don't. I know that's not true.
Yeah.
Like, but it's because I've seen the video. So maybe that.
Also an excellent answer. You guys are so clever.
I think I've got the right answer, though. I think
hit us.
He finally talked to a girl. This fucking nerd. He's like, there we go.
Now I love Men's Month.
I love Men's Month.
We just wouldn't have got
that. The nerds.
Yeah, for the record, I love nerds. I love nerds. I'm married to a nerd. I'm a bit of a nerd. Love nerds. Just making that clear. We don't even give points really, but I'm going to give you the point for that just for the best answer. Absolutely love that. Also, hold that thought. I will tell you, the memory he had was waking up in a hospital in Arkansas to a doctor telling him that he would never fully recover.
Oh.
The doctor
from being in Arkansas. I don't know, Arkansas, it might be really nice.
Well, that was a hell of a kiss.
that was really good, both of those. The doctor explained that Muybridge had been in a very serious stagecoach accident. He had nearly died and he had been thrown headfirst into a boulder.
Oh, wow.
And Muybridge responded, "I'm just a boy standing in front of a doctor asking him to fix me." And after 6 years of recuperation, Muybridge miraculously did recover better than anyone expected. But there were some stark differences between pre-accident Muybridge and post-accident. What were the differences in him?
Can I just really quick, I'm taking you off on a tangent here.
No.
But this is the podcast hosting me. I'm taking over now. But I just want to quickly tell a story about one of the most inspirational women I've ever met, my nan. She was amazing. There's so many stories about her, but she had a horse riding accident once. And she was on this horse, and it's one of my favourite stories because she got, by the end, you'll understand why it's not my favourite. At the moment, I'm like, she got thrown off this horse. Hilarious. She got thrown off this horse, and she wasn't moving on the floor. And my mum and aunt and the person who ran like the horse place really panicked and rushed over. And they got to her, and they said, like, are you okay? And she opened her eyes and went, oh, yeah, I'm fine. And they said, like, why aren't you moving? And she said, I assumed I would have died. So she genuinely assumed she wouldn't have survived it. So she didn't bother getting up. She was like, I'm not going to survive that. I just laid in the mud. Because at her age, she didn't have any injuries. She was absolutely fine.
Wow.
It seemed so ridiculous that she would be okay, that she just laid there.
Oh, wow. I love that.
And they all rushed over in such a panic. It was so beautiful. What a woman.
Probably probably why she survived. She's probably so relaxed that she just landed.
Like this is me then. Yeah. Let's go.
No she tension. Was flying through the air.
Wow.
So that is a beautiful acceptance of mortality. That is a lesson for
that's
us
incredible.
All.
That's incredible. What a woman.
Yeah. Amazing.
Oh, I would I'd shit myself halfway through. Like I would not have any of that cool.
Absolutely. I'd be doing that on the horse. That's why it would have thrown me off, because I'd just be in sheer panic.
Okay, so in the case of Scroobius's Nan, the difference was she was even more of a legend once she got thrown off a horse.
Yes.
From Moybridge, what do we think the differences were?
So the differences, was he no longer a nerd? Did he wake up with sunglasses on and his hair like slicked back and a matchstick in his mouth?
He was just in slow motion.
His sleeves rolled up.
Packet of fags, yeah.
Bum, 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 bum. Looking back on the track.
Love it. Okay. So he was cool. Somebody in the chat wrote he was a horse, which I really liked.
Yeah.
No better way to discover how you can run.
That's it. Yeah. He went home and found out. Hang on, my feet are off the floor.
Do you know what? I shall just tell you, just for the sake of moving us along, he had lost his taste and smell. Maybe it was COVID. But more importantly, he had been mild-mannered, polite, and soft-spoken. After the accident, Moybridge was described as argumentative, obsessive, intense, and had a very short fuse.
Has anyone else turned on?
I was going to say, so he did turn cool.
I think you were right. Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
Now he was kind of a prick. Uh-huh. A cool prick. But Moybridge suddenly became obsessed with something that would eventually lead to his discovery of horses galloping. What was his obsession?
Ooh, well, I guess if it's a stagecoach, was it getting revenge on horses? Because he's, but do you know what I mean? Like, he saw horses as the ones that were responsible. They ran into the boulder. It wasn't him.
Wow.
And he was kind of like, I hate those fuckers. And so he thought he'd watch them run for years.
He wanted real revenge. So he started pulling horses around on a stagecoach. Hoping that one of them is going to fall out.
That's such excellent storytelling, Hannah George. I love that. Like, now I will get my revenge.
It's my turn.
Boom, 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 boom.
Well, like, I like that as well. Because I was thinking you were going to say, like, this he inadvertently led to the discovery of horses. So he was trying to do something else.
Right.
So maybe he was trying to safety-proof stagecoaches or something.
Photographing horses, but, like, to catch them out. Like, try and catch them cheating and stuff like that.
So sneaking into state,
private detective stuff, just sneaking in and photographing them up to no good.
Well, funny enough, you are the closest because you said the magic word, which is photography.
Yeah.
Oh.
He became obsessed with photography. He learned everything he could. He started innovating new techniques. Historians think that he may have developed something called sudden savant syndrome, which is where somebody with a brain injury develops a new artistic ability. I paused on that for so long because I was just thinking, like, ironically, I hit my head against a wall so much as a writer.
You'd think I'd
be better at it by now.
Just to prove I'm here to not just be the male representative. One of the other most inspirational women in my life, a woman called Francesca Burr, had a traumatic head injury and woke up. Initially only able to speak French. Now, it's not as cool as it sounds because she did speak French before she had the injury. It wasn't some magic thing, but she had to relearn English, but still had French fluently, which, again, just...
That's
kind of thing is amazing, isn't it? That we just don't understand any of that.
It's what the brain is doing at all. There's so much we don't know about it. It's
I wish
wild.
That had happened to me in 2003, just before my French GCSE.
Yeah.
Yeah, I failed that fucker, but...
to bonk.
I've got it.
We've had other cases with similar injuries where it's led to a personality change because everything that goes on in the frontal lobe determines things like... I mean, a lot of what your personality is in there, but it's restraint. It's what keeps us polite and sort of reasoning. Mm. So you remove those things and you get a very different person.
Well, yeah, and also if he was very nice and polite and then suddenly he's very focused and potentially aggressive, he was like, he's freed up all the energy he was wasting on manners and he's plowing it into something he actually cares about.
Photography and being cool.
Photography and being cool. Fuck those books.
Yeah.
Fuck books. Now, he develops a bit of a reputation as a very skilled photographer.
Not as he develops.
He develops a bit of self-esteem, and in 1871, he does something he's never done before.
Do you want to take this, Pip? Because I feel
this
as though...
This is when he kissed a girl.
Yeah.
Got you. Thank you, guys.
He kissed a girl, and he liked it.
Wow. Bad boys. Get the girl.
Yeah.
So, but he was 30 when he had the head injury, and then this was a few years later, so he's a kind of late bloomer.
A bit of a late bloomer. From all the accounts, it does feel like this is the first woman he had actually spoken to. And he marries her. She was half his age, which can be really gross, but he was 41 by then, so it's all right.
This is such bad precedent being set that as soon as he became an arsehole, he gets the girl. He's this lovely nerd selling books. No one goes near him. As soon as he becomes a horrible, obsessed dickhead, he's like, but if this I is a lady.
This is a good. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there about what's wrong with society.
Yeah.
But if this was a rom-com, there would be a turn. I'm hoping for a turnaround at the end, Taylor, that, you know, he has another head injury. In the rom-com version, he gets another head injury, reverts back to the sort of nerd alert, but she still loves him.
Yes. She's so like, I love rare books. Mwah. Okay, well, let's see if that's what happens. Around this same time, Muybridge is approached by a very wealthy man from California who wishes to settle a bet about horses. This man believes that horses' hooves all come off the ground during a gallop, and he wants to prove it. He's so sure of himself that he puts a lot of money on this bet. How much money in today's US dollars, please, do you think this bet was worth?
Is it the 1870s now?
Yes, but with inflation in today's dollars, what do you think this bet was worth?
And it's a guy who's come into place, a guy who's convinced that this is the case that's come
into
place.
Yes, I will tell you who that man is in a moment, but he's a very wealthy man. He's
from California.
He's got a little too much time and money, and he wants to prove this, so he's made a bet with somebody.
I love that he's probably just totally misinterpreted. Someone said, you're going to have a bet on the horses at the weekend? And he's I reckon.
Yeah, I've got some theories.
Yeah, I reckon they think in Spanish. So,
what do you think the bet was worth? Quick numbers, guys.
Ooh. 2 million.
2 million.
5,000.
5,000.
In that case, I'll go 6,000 and then I'm hopefully, you know.
Yeah. Nice.
Somewhere in between.
I like the variety. It was $1 million bet.
$1 million bet.
Whoa.
Just for a bit of fun. So who was this crazy millionaire? He was a railroad tycoon who set up racing stables in California, and those stables would eventually get turned into a famous university. Any guesses what university this might be? California.
Oh, this is when I reveal I don't know anything. Is it Ivy League? I've heard of that.
It isn't technically, but it's sometimes considered the West Coast Ivy.
Is Cornell a thing?
Oh, I went to Cornell. No, that's in upstate New York, but thanks for giving a shout out. Nerd alert. Shall I tell you? It was Stanford University.
Ow, I've heard
that. That was on the tip of my tongue.
The man
I live in Stamfordly Hope, so I'm just out here. That I should have got that, really. Literally, it's where I live, but yeah.
Drunk women solving crime.
You've heard of Barbie. You've heard of Cindy. But have you heard of Katie? That's right. Now you can own your very own Katie doll. There's Katie Wilson. Hi, Katie Wilson. There's Katie Martin. Hey, Kay Martin. And they've even got a best friend, Lynn Ann Price, because three Katies would just be confusing. Katie dolls are more realistic than other dolls. They've got real-world problems. You can brush Katie's hair, you can dress her up for work, but you'd better do her taxes or the government will get on her back. Katie loves going for a drive, but uh-oh, her MOT's out of date. Here come the cops. Katie better call Lynn Ann for a lift. Lynn Ann's got her own things to worry about. She's just taken out a second mortgage and her energy costs are skyrocketing. She also suffers from occasional panic attacks, but don't worry, she comes with her own CBD oil. Katie dolls, because nothing's more fun than real life. Lynn Ann sold separately. Hey, would you like your own surreal shout out and other goodies? Check us out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime. Thanks as always for your support.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
So the man was called Leland Stanford, and like I said, too much time, too much money. Thank fuck Twitter wasn't around back then, because he would have bought it. He would have messed it up. Ruined the blue tick system. Like, you could just picture it. Stanford says, I'll pay you a lot of money. It doesn't matter how long it takes if you can prove my theory. At first, Muybridge refuses. He says it's impossible. It can't be done. And the reason why is that film required a 15-second exposure at best to capture an image. And to capture a horse mid-gallop, you needed an exposure of 0.1 seconds. But Stanford's rich, so he doesn't take no for an answer. He pushes him. Muybridge says, fine, I'll do my best. Meanwhile, back home, Flora is bored as hell. She's getting no attention. Muybridge has no idea how to be a husband, so he does something to help her fill the time. And I will tell you, this is what eventually leads to the crime. What does Muybridge do to help his wife at home fill the time? Someone just wrote dildo. Oh, he would have made the best dildo. 0.1 seconds.
Like, you have made it sound like it's an invention, but maybe
it's
he
not.
Gives her a...
It's not an invention.
So does he give her a job to do, or...
Okay.
Does he, like, say, take up horse riding? Like, I need someone to ride these horses.
Teamwork.
Yeah. They could spend some time together.
That's nice.
He could pay her and they could write it off against tax. It'd be great.
Oh, romantic. That's so nice.
You're thinking of nice guy Muybridge. This isn't bad guy Muybridge. Nice guy Muybridge would have definitely looked for them to do stuff together, have fun.
Oh, man.
He'd have got her a... Yeah. A sort of a sex toy and wouldn't have insisted on watching her use it.
Yeah,
like, God, such a nice guy. I miss that guy.
Just leave you to it. That's the man you want. Just leave me to it. Let me make the face I'm going to make without you needing to look. Okay. Oh, dear. Well, it would have been hard to guess this, but it really shows his... naivety. Smart guy, very naive. He paid a young, handsome drama critic called Harry Larkins to take her to the theater all the time.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. So bless him, he basically sends her on romantic dates that he's not taking her on. And in 1874, Flora announces she's pregnant.
Ooh.
Muybridge is ecstatic at first, but then he learns that the baby isn't his because he finds a letter where Flora calls the baby Little Harry.
Wow.
Oh, which is weird because it was a girl. Little Harry. So at this stage, I'm going to ask you, what crime do you think Muybridge commits?
Oh, no, is it? Yeah, I feel like Little Harry dies by virtue of Flora dying, by virtue of him being the murderer.
Okay.
He murders his wife, is what I'm trying to say.
It's a fair assumption, given...
Yeah, is that... Or he might murder the young gentleman?
I was going to say, if we're picking one each, I'll go with murder the child. So So we've got the child, the wife, and the toy boy. There
we left you the really dark one, sorry.
Yeah. Guys, this is what we want from a detective team, is all bases covered. So I know it's uncomfortable, but we went there. Katie got it right. He murders Harry Larkin. He murders him in cold blood. He shows up to his ranch house, knocks on the door, has a gun, and he says, "I've got a message from my wife," and shoots him dead.
Wow.
The trial is a sensation because here's this bohemian photographer who's working with this rich tycoon to try to solve this bet, and now he's accused of murder. He pled insanity. The death penalty was in use in California at this time. So your next question, what do you think the verdict was?
I feel like a rich person wants him alive, so he's going to be fine. And there's too much riding on this stupid bet because everyone cares about...
Nothing kills a bet.
Yeah.
You got bet is a bet.
The code of that. So I feel like also he's got this injury with the extraordinary transformation and the memory. So I think he's got a pretty good get out, which with the lawyers that the rich guy can afford, I reckon he gets off with his, you know, semi-legitimate issues, even though that does look a cold-blooded kill.
Also, he's got a penis and it's the 1870s, so there's a valid defence as well.
And this is why we chose you for Men's Month. It's right there.
It's okay if you say that.
We wouldn't dream of it.
I mean, pointing out the elephant in the room, he wishes it was an elephant.
Name your sex tape.
Also, I really like the fact that, like, he's pleading insanity. And, like, in terms of proof, he's like, "I'm trying to prove that horses, when they run, they..." It's like such a fucking insane thing to do anyway. That's really going to help him in court.
Ever since you talked through the actual shooting, I've just had a vision of Harry on the floor kind of just going... "So what was the message? Was that the message? What was the message from This was the message. Got you. No. Sorry.
Yeah. It was ambiguous. I get it now.
It feels more like a message from you. She wouldn't say this. Any other guesses on the verdict? Any differences of opinion?
Guilty by insanity, I think, which I guess means that he wasn't killed.
Yeah.
The verdict is fucking crazy. But not
as crazy
because,
as him.
Not because he actually got off on insanity. The verdict is just fucking crazy. The jury says, yes, he's guilty of murder and he's not insane. But all 12 men on the jury agreed that they would do the exact same thing if they were in his shoes. Wow. It's 12 angry men.
Wow.
So they acquit him on the basis of justifiable homicide.
Oh, wow. So they're all hoping a jury of their peers will let them off when they kill somebody that fucks their wife.
Yeah.
Wow. That is the system in a nutshell, to be fair.
It is a real, oh boy.
It's really astounding, particularly when you realise, as I said, he set that whole situation up. Like, he put his wife in a situation, he left her alone, then put her in a situation to fall in love with. He paid someone to treat his wife well.
Yes.
And then got angry when she went, "Well, this is quite nice, isn't it?"
Yeah.
This
and
is
all
actually
the jury
what I thought,
were like, "Yep, absolutely fair."
I know.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You're making a living trying to solve a bet. Yeah, just to briefly make it more depressing, Flora catches typhoid and dies, and Muybridge lets her son go to an orphanage because he knows it's not him. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Shit.
But guys,
so
great.
In that time, orphanages were really bad, so we're probably all right on who died. Probably all three did die, so that's a shared win. It's unlikely this kid survived.
So
just to perk things up there in the name of points.
Yeah. You know what, you're right. The good news is you all got
it
right.
They all died.
Real silver lining there.
This is the rom-com ending we're looking for.
Yeah.
Also great news, Stanford still wants him for the project.
Of course he does.
Because it's just a little blip. He was acquitted.
Yeah.
And the law and
justice can't be wrong.
This
is golden goose syndrome. This is why all these terrible executives are allowed to do crimes.
Yeah.
They have a... We're like, they're too big to fail now, so everyone covers up for them.
Yeah. It's so bad. They're like, just the word of the law is, okay, we found him guilty, but if you go, but...
Yeah.
You can then make up your own rules? Like, what?
It's the fact that anyone, like the judge or the jury, can do that. That it's not just, yeah. Oh, no, they're guilty. Go, they're guilty, as you say. But, yeah, we've decided. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Justifiable homicide.
Justifiable
like,
homicide.
Who gets to decide? Well, 12 white men get to decide what's justifiable.
What a system.
It's crazy. Before I tell you... how he made it happen, because he does manage to capture this image, which proves
well. Thank the hoof goodness.
Theory. It all comes back to horses. This is all that matters. Do you want to guess how Muybridge managed to capture that photo? I will tell you this. On the science side, he did develop a chemical for film, which was far more light sensitive. So there was a much briefer exposure, but he had to physically set up the shoot of this horse running in a way that would capture this one shot. How do you think he did that? It's a really hard question, but I thought I'd throw it out there.
Did he, as he was justifiably killing Harry... He saw the gun flash, and it gave him this inspiration for a quicker flash for for the film, and to catch this horse, to use a flash rather than an exposure.
Maybe.
Inspired by the justifiable murder of
Maybe. While you're That's justifying a homicide, you better learn along the way. Nerd
I did it
alert.
For science.
It was all for science.
I wonder if, did he have to set up like more than one camera, just because you might not get the right bit of when the horse is moving. Mm. So he's got some in a row. Like, you know, when you can put it on, what do you call it when you take loads of photos in a row on an iPhone? Shutter, what's like, it called?
I just call it rapid.
Rapid mode. What am I, a millennial? No. I'm a zennial. But anyway, the special...
Katie, you're right. There were multiple cameras. Okay. That was absolutely key. Brilliant.
Wait, what was the question?
How did he set it up? How did he manage to get this miraculous photo of a horse mid-gallop?
Oh, yeah, that's my answer. Multiple cameras.
Yeah, it should have been impossible at the time. So that was a huge part of it. I will tell you, I find it really interesting. He set up a huge white sheet in the background to capture the horse more easily. Mm. Smart. This is also really important that the horse's name was Abe Eddington.
Oh,
he's the real hero. He's the real hero. Yeah.
Also, he's the only pure hero in this. He's the only one that really comes out well.
As long as that horse isn't a white horse, because that would have fucked
up. Damn it! Green screen invisibility.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't think this through. Here's a message from my wife. The horse was harnessed with a cart that was connected to a bunch of tripwires that were attached to a dozen cameras. So it was up to the horse as he rode over them to set them all off as quickly as possible.
Amazing.
And he did it brilliantly. He managed to take all 12 pictures in 1 second, which is astounding.
I like this guy now.
I mean, it's like murder schmurder.
I like the horse. I'm not so sure about the guy. I'm definitely sold on the horse.
Abe's doing the hard work here. So just one of the pictures proved the hoof theory, because that's how quickly a horse gallops. Stanford wins the bet. This was a huge discovery. And so not only did they prove that a horse's four hooves are off the ground, but the way that artists had depicted them before was, again, all splayed out like spread eagle. But at the point which all the hooves are up, they're tucked under the horse's body, and nobody could have imagined that. So that was a huge surprise. It created a ton of drama. Everybody's forgotten about the murder by now. Nobody gives a shit, but this is huge. Scientists were thrilled, but artists were pissed off because they had been painting horses wrong and they could not accept that.
Doesn't artist kill him and it's justifiable homicide?
Nice.
Now that would be justice. It really would. Just a fun anecdote. Rodin, the famous French sculptor, said, "It is the artist that determines reality because time doesn't stop."
Wow.
Rodin McBitterman. He was pissed. Your final question is this. Did Stanford and Muybridge remain friends? People are talking about US court law in the chat. This is brilliant. I love this.
And we're kind of like, were they still friends at the end?
What happened to the horse?
I mean, it occurred to me halfway through that we're all shocked at this. How can they have this justifiable homicide thing? And you look at America at the moment with people being shot on their on someone's doorstep and things like that. Or
oh God!
Yeah. We're looking at this in the past, and it is
with
something
horror,
actually.
Yeah. I know. Yeah,
it's weirdly prevalent.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the sad thing about a lot of these cases. You kind of go, "What?" and then you just think of an equivalent from now, and you go, "Oh shit, okay."
Yeah, yeah. We really tidied that one up.
Yeah,
exactly. Did Stanford and Muybridge remain friends? That's your last question.
Well, did it? Wait, what did the guy? What did the rich guy bet that they jump in the air? So he was proved right. So he won his bet.
He's
won $1 million. Who did he bet against? Doesn't matter, does it?
I don't know. It was just another guy that had enough money to say, no, okay. I disagree. Yeah. It was Mr. Cornell. It was Ezra Cornell from New York.
It's one of the artists. It's Rodin. It's like they definitely know. I've made too many sculptures.
Damn
I can't
it.
Redo them. You can't rub out marble.
Once it's hard, it's hard. How many times do I have to tell you?
Yeah.
Also, I don't even think it's that embarrassing, the fact that... I think that's a really weird sort of thing for an artist to be like, well, I didn't... It's kind of like, well, yeah, it's just that's what it... I don't know.
It's bizarre for an artist to say, no, I outrank facts. Like,
Just there's so many Rodin and horse jokes going in the chat. You and the horse you Rodin in and various. So
nice.
Just wonderful work
well
from
done,
everyone
Lauren.
In chat at the moment. They're flying.
They're amazing.
Up.
They're amazing. They're the wind beneath our drunken wings. They really are.
It seems crazy that they wouldn't have remained friends when he's made him presumably a million. But I assume that's why it's a notable fact. I assume they somehow fell out because
I'm with you. I'm like, why is she even asking us this? So either they're like BFFs forever, or he was really embarrassed about the murder thing and he had to. If he's like from a posh family that starts universities, he probably has to. I'd say he probably has to distance himself from murderers, but he probably doesn't because you can just do what you want. All right, I'm going with Best Friends Club.
Best Friends Club. Okay.
Yeah, I think BFFs.
BFFs. They really should have. They should have been this dynamic duo. But what happened was Stanford took all the credit for this discovery.
Right.
And he just treated him like an employee.
Yeah. Huh.
As though he was the scientist that had uncovered this. He banked all the
that could have been a shrewd PR move as well with the whole murder thing. Oh, sorry, continue.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. He even published a book where he barely mentions Muybridge. So Muybridge...
Ooh.
Wants nothing more to do with him.
Kind of happy about it. He was clearly a dick.
Yeah.
But I mean, Muybridge is just such an enjoyable name to say. I've enjoyed it every time you've said it.
Oh,
I've said some stuff that I didn't really need that didn't add anything. I just wanted to say Muybridge.
Muybridge.
I won't get
Muybridge.
The opportunity many times. Muybridge.
Also, I've said it for an hour and I hope I'm saying it right. No guarantees. Don't write
right
and tell
eyes.
Us. I don't want to know.
This version makes people happy.
Don't want to know. I shall
end an artist. It's better than whatever the real thing is.
I will end the case on this note just to say that Muybridge went on to keep working, stayed obsessed with photography, and he discovered that if you strung photos together in rapid succession, they appeared to be moving.
Oh.
So film pioneers would eventually build upon his work to make film cameras.
Oh, man, I thought the French invented moving
Maybe
pictures.
He had another knock to the head and they thought he was French.
Bonjour! I think on that note, let's raise a glass to Abe the Horse.
Yes.
Abe the Horse.
Drunk women solving crime.
This is from Sarah. Sarah, thank you very much for putting this in the chat. I live in the Netherlands and a local sex club burned down. Nice! You've brought it full circle with clubs. Oh, we talked about that before we recorded. You know what? Join Patreon and you'll know what we're talking about. I live in the Netherlands. I'm just going to say it again. From Sarah. I live in the Netherlands and a local sex club burned down. It's not clear who or how it began. The club had been shut down for a while, but it was apparently meant to be reopening soon. Who or what started the fire and why? I have several times made the joke that for someone, they may have genuinely meant it when they sung, "The sex is on fire." Very nice, Sarah. P.S. Here is an article I managed to find in English. Thank you very much. Ooh, from the Netherlands Times, no less.
Oh.
Yes, I consent to your data. There's just a big fire truck. Large
consent's
fire
very
in
important
sex club.
At a sex club, I'm sure.
Here's another detail, yeah. Too. Large fire in sex club sauna.
Sex club sauna.
Whoa. Yeah.
So do you think someone's wife cheated on them there and it was a justifiable arson?
Yeah!
It seems like the place that if you're gonna...
Well crafted.
Yeah, they can't have affairs if we burn it down.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna top that answer, but I was just gonna say a practical one, which is saunas are a fire risk if they're not set up properly.
You think it's not a crime? You think it's an accident?
Maybe it was just an accident. Somebody left the sauna running.
Is it like, but it said it hadn't been open for a while.
Yeah,
so
true.
When does a sex club cease being a sex club and just become a room? Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Me and Amanda went to look at a venue for our London residency and we were like walking through and it was a bit sticky and they were like, oh God, that was the sex club that we had here last night. And we were like, is it? Okay, I just can I go to the toilets and wash my hands? Actually, I'm going to go somewhere else to wash my hands.
Yeah.
It was kind of like... It was quite amazing because for a start, like, I didn't really know. I mean, I guess they don't advertise the sort of sex club side of it.
Well, not out the front.
No.
That should not be the reason for a sticky floor, whatever you were doing. Like, that's too much.
But yeah, part-time comedy club, part-time sex club.
That's what the comedy store used to be, though, didn't it? People did stand up in between the strippers. All right, fine.
Wow.
Very different.
Oh my gosh, I once did a charity gig on Battersea Barge and it was like a really fun lineup, but for some reason after it was like Sarah Pascoe, Catherine Ryan, burlesque act, and then me. And like just nobody was in the mood for comedy after that because she was fantastic. Like she was just gorgeous. She had these amazing nipple tassels. Like what was I going to bring to the barge after
like,
that?
Burlesque is kind of funny though. It's like it's really clowning and stuff, isn't it? It's like really cheeky with the like, oh, am I going to do this? No, I tricked you.
That's what I mean. So she, like whatever cheek I brought, it didn't come with nipples. So it was just...
A friend of mine... He used to do burlesque, and it was one of the funniest shows I've ever seen because they'd built all of their full costume, but they'd cut out breast holes in the jacket, the shirt, everything. So their breasts were out from the start, and then they did this whole routine of slowly unbuttoning. And then the final thing was they took their shirt off, but turned it round to cover them up, and you saw that holes on the back as well. So it was just this beautiful comedy routine that was
dressed up
as burlesque or undressed as burlesque.
I've always kind of, if I was brave enough, I would love to do like a burlesque routine where I show how women really look when we get undressed, like particularly like in a jumpsuit when we need to wee, because that is a sight. There's nothing sexy about how we really get out of our clothes. Like we're jumping around and wiggling. It's crazy.
Yes. I very rarely kind of put any of my clothes away at the end of the night. So like if I don't know, it looks like someone has spontaneously combusted next to my bed because I've got my shoes and then my jeans and then my top.
Was there a vampire here?
Yeah, exactly. And when I used to wear like cowboy boots, my cowboy boots would be up like that, just look like a cowboy had done a runner or something naked.
Oh, that's so cute. The thing is, I think we nailed this right off the bat because you're an excellent detective, Scroobius. It was justifiable arson.
Justifiable arson.
So there you go, Sarah.
Perfect.
Let the authorities know. You're very welcome.
That we forgive them.
We wouldn't mind a little credit since we did solve this crime. So, this has been so fun. Thank you so much. We have just enough time to say, Scroobius, can you tell us about yourself, please? Where can people find you? What have you got going on? What would you like to plug?
Distraction Pieces podcast, and a great episode to start with would be when I had you guys on and had a weird amount of really specific information on each of you.
Oh my God, you did.
Talk about very specific things. Because again, I thought you'd be, it's boring if I'm just going over the same stuff you're probably asked all the time. So yeah.
Yeah, mix
so yeah,
it
the
up.
Distraction Pieces podcast is out every Wednesday. Other than that, yeah, I've not got anything I need to plug. I'm acting in a few things which aren't out yet, but yeah, they will all be on their way.
Okay, so we'll watch this space and check out the podcast. Sorry, Katie.
I was just going to say, I don't know if you remember Scroobius, but I think the first time that I met you was at the, like, that Q&A screening of Super Bob.
Yes.
And they showed Corner Boys.
Yes, with me and Brett. Well.
Yeah, it was so good.
I definitely recommend. They're all on Vimeo. Go and look at Corner Boys with Emmy Award winner Brett Goldstein. we've always said we're going to do more, and each time he wins another award, I think it's more and it's less and less likely, unless we get to do the big budget Corner Boys film at this stage.
Yeah,
doesn't seem likely,
but
that's a series about crime. Essentially, it's two drug dealers on a corner, but the kind of idea is that they don't really know where they're meant to sell drugs, how to sell drugs, how to top up their drugs. So they're kind of just on a corner for weeks on end and nothing happens. Oh. And yeah.
It's brilliant. Love
it. Yeah, they were great fun. I forgot we screened them. Yeah, fantastic.
Amazing. Well, one last time for Scroobius Pip. Legend. And thank you to all the patrons for joining us. For, you know.
You can't just back out halfway through a thank you.
Harsh, warm. Thank you so much for joining us. You really make this so much fun when we do live Zoom.
We've got emojis of claps. Hey. I'm not making it up. They're all there.
You backed out of that sentence so hard, it made me take a swig of my drink. We're done.
I was telling Amanda at the beginning,
the clock.
When I do attempt moderation, which I do from time to time, but I'll always leave the bottle downstairs. And then, as these guys know, I message my husband and I'll go, bring the bottle. And so there's usually like a hairy arm that just comes in with the bottle. Maybe I should keep it up. But I was like, you know what? Tonight, I'm just going to bring the bottle. But wow, I've hit the kava. It's Wednesday. I'm covered.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman with music by The Lion and the Wolf. You can follow us on Twitter at Drunk Women Pod and on Facebook and Instagram at Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. Also, if you've got a petty crime you want us to solve, then please write it in that review and we'll solve it. Thank you so much to Acast for hosting us, and thank you for listening.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.